No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 45 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I am Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes on the Commentist Network at thecommentist.com. And of course, you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans at gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will find out where in the world Andy is, ask the question, should it be a crime to feed children a vegan diet? And conclude with an interview with Naja Wright Brown, organizer of Vegan Soul Fest and co-owner of Land of Kush. But first, we have an announcement.
These are more just reminders of things we've already brought up. But again, we are up for a Best Vegan Podcast Award. Yay. From Veg News, and found out that the voting ends on August 31st. So you still have plenty of time to go through and give us a nod if you feel that we have earned your vote. And you get to, it's a very extensive survey, and you can vote. You don't have to vote for everything, apparently, but you can vote on everything from your favorite vegan bakery to your favorite vegan deodorant, or, you know, this is like a whole ton of categories. So it's really cool to give your nod of appreciation to other vegan businesses and blogs and things of that nature. So thank you to everyone that's already said they voted for us. And yeah, go check it out. We have a link to that. We'll do it in the show notes, and we also have a link to that on our Instagram page as well. And another reminder that we are doing a live podcast taping at VegStock in Millville, New Jersey on September 10th. So come out to that and make sure we're not recording to an empty room.
Yeah. So that's really it for the announcements. As Andy said, it's more of just reminders. So Andy, where have you been? I know you ironically came back to Connecticut on the one day that I wasn't there.
I planned it perfectly. Yes, very sad. It wasn't really planned, but I was in Buffalo. I was in Buffalo, and and then I had to be in New York City, and I realized I could swing through Connecticut for a day or two, and I did that. And one of the reasons why I felt inclined to do that was because Buffalo is just not my kind of town, Paul.
And so, we just lost 20 Buffalo listeners out there.
One of the first things I do whenever I get to a new town is I'll open up my trusty Happy Cow app and see what's going on food-wise. And it's actually going to be there for a few days because I had a very short distance to travel from Pittsburgh. And I opened up Happy Cow and I went, this can't be right. This can't be the only vegan options that are in town. There was like no all vegan spots. There was like a vegetarian spot or two, and it was all just like very underwhelming. And it's been a while since I've been in Buffalo. So I kind of assumed that it was a city of that size, that there would be a lot of vegan food, even if it wasn't 100% vegan places. And it was quite disappointing. So, So boo to that. I did go to Niagara Falls, which was great, but like the U.S. side is just like a garbage food court. I was told by someone on our Instagram that there is actually a couple of really great vegan spots on the Canadian side, but I did not get to venture over there. But upon seeing the lack of options, I remember that I had gotten an email from one of our listeners who we've been talking to on Instagram, Sarah, who sent a long list of things to eat in Buffalo and Rochester as well. And I got to meet Sarah at the WNY Veg Fest along with Holly and Jason. So shout out to all the beardos that showed up. And also Casey Taft, friend of the show. Casey Taft was there as well. But learned from Sarah, Rochester is the place to be. And it's only like an hour from Buffalo. And I should have just gone there for a couple of days because they have several all vegan places. And on Sarah's recommendation, I went to Red Fern. And it was really cool, cute little cafe. I got the Steak Bomb, which is a name that I feel like does not belong at a place called Red Fern, but it's basically like a Philly cheesesteak, which I'm always kind of a sucker for anything of that nature. The only variation was that it was with a horseradish mayo, which was really good. Hmm. Yeah. And then I made my way down to Connecticut by way of Albany, and I returned to Bourbon and Wolf's.
Oh yeah. One of my favorite places, I'd say, even though I only had it once, I definitely need to go back there.
This was my second time there, and I got the fried mushroom po' boy, which I believe you got that to go last time, and it wasn't so spectacular after the fried crispiness had worn off.
Yeah, it had gotten a bit soggy afterwards, but what was your take on it, having it fresh?
It was great. It reminded me of like a fried clam po' boy or something.
Yeah.
Not that I was ever a fan of clams, but the fried aspect of it was really good. And so, yeah, I just continue to recommend Bourbon and Wolf's. Really good spot. But yeah, overall, northern upstate New York, not really happening.
I've actually, just to harp on Bourbon and Wolf's, I've, in like this entire summer, I haven't been back there since we went, but I've been constantly being like, am I close enough to like make an excuse to just drive out there and get that? Like, I'll be going to somewhere in New York and I'll be like, this would be like a 2-hour out of the way drive. And I've been weighing the pros and cons of that, but I haven't made it back there yet.
Yeah. Paul, we should do a trip. We should do a trip at some point. And then we can also hit up Plante. I believe that is the restaurant that one of our wonderful enthusiastic beardos works at and keeps encouraging us to go to, and it hasn't quite worked out yet. Maybe we could plan a little food trip.
Food trip. I'm down.
So, yeah. And I guess, sadly, I did not get to stop at Strong Hearts in Syracuse, which is a place that I love and I think you would love too, Paul, but didn't quite work out in the schedule. So I don't want to give upstate New York too much short shrift because they are awesome. But yeah, so it was a little underwhelming in the food department this week. Paul?
Yes, Andy?
What went in your beautiful mouth this week?
So we actually, just the way it's worked out, even though we're releasing the episodes consistently every week, we haven't recorded for like almost 2 weeks at this point, I think. Close to 2 weeks now. And I have done a comparable amount of traveling, I think, to what Andy typically does. I think in 1 week, I drove about 45 to 50 hours.
That's it?
All right, maybe not. But I went to, with other commentist podcast, Roll to Hit, with that crew, we went up to Indianapolis to go to Gen Con, which is like a board game convention, which was awesome. So I got, and I'd never been to Indianapolis before, so that was cool. And the first, so it was about a 16-hour drive. And when our hotel was in the town right next to Indianapolis, Plainfield, Indiana. And we got there after 16 hours and it's like everyone was sick of driving. We weren't going to drive into, I wasn't going to make, because I was the only vegan, I wasn't going to make everyone drive into Indianapolis to try to find some good vegan food, because I'm sure there are lots and lots of at least vegan friendly spots. So I just opened up the Happy Cow app to see what was around, and it was kind of like a rurally town, so I didn't expect much. There was a lot of fast food places, so I found this Indian place that was pretty close by, and I was like, you know what, Indian food, very very easily veganable, and it was on the Happy Cow app, so I was like, well, let's go to there. Everyone else was like, yeah, sure. So we drive there, and I enter it. This place is called India Bistro in Plainfield, Indiana, and I enter the door, and it says, this was on a Thursday, and it says every Thursday night, vegan buffet. And I was like, yes.
Score.
I know. I could not believe it. I was like, this is, because the Happy Cow, I don't even think the Happy Cow app said anything about that. It was just kind of like, oh, this is a vegan friendly restaurant, as I would assume most Indian restaurants are. So I was stoked on that. It was all you can eat. It was only $9, I think. And I got a whole bunch of stuff. I posted that pic on the Bearded Vegan's Instagram. I didn't post, there was this like mango dessert that was fresh fruit in this mango sauce. And it was like dessert soup, and it was so good. So that's what I had the first night. And I was like, all right, off to a good start. And then the next couple days when we were actually in Indianapolis, I basically, because I didn't want to walk too far, I basically went to this place, Bee Coffee, which is just a kind of hip, funky coffee shop. That was right across the street from the convention center, and they sell, and I didn't make it to the actual store, but they sell food from this place, 3 Carrots, which someone told me was possibly the only all vegan place in Indianapolis. I'm sure there's tons of vegan friendly places, but I had gotten, so from Bee Coffee, which I would also recommend, I got a couple stuff from 3 Carrots. One was like a tofu sandwich with pesto sauce, which I'm in love with pesto almost as much as I dislike pineapple pizza. So that was good.
For shame. You know what's great on pineapple pizza, Paul?
Pesto?
Pesto.
Really?
A pesto and pineapple pizza for Paul.
That sounds disgusting. But yeah, that sandwich was really good. And then the next day, I did the same thing. I just got more food from this place. And it was a Southwest tofu salad, which was awesome. It had like southern fried tofu. There was this chipotle sauce. It did have chips in it. And at this point, since it was kind of like packaged, the chips were soggy. So that was kind of a bummer. But that other than that, it was very, very good. And I also got, there was a bunch of food trucks and there was one called Duos. And they had some vegan friendly stuff too. It was like this nice bowl of, I believe it was like quinoa and tofu. And it was good. It was really good. So Indianapolis, way to go. And also I had met up with one of my friends, Amanda, and she had brought me from Three Carrots a couple baked goods. So I can attest that their baked goods are also very, very delicious. So if you're in Indianapolis, definitely go to Three Carrots. That seems like the place to be. That's all I really got for food. I also went to, like, I came back from Indianapolis and went to Maine the next day to go hiking. And just to give you a perspective of that, I opened up my Happy Cow app where I was staying in Maine, and the closest thing was 40 miles away. So there was not too much there. I got some Chinese food and a Subway, and that's about it.
Can't go wrong with Chinese food. I mean, you can.
You would think, but I ordered a tofu dish. It was like sesame tofu. And it was literally just tofu. Like, it was just cubes of tofu in sauce. There was no vegetables. There was no rice. It was just tofu.
I just picture plain unseasoned tofu with, like, some sesame seeds sprinkled over it.
Not too far away.
Yeah, that's actually something that was really disappointing about Buffalo is I found two different Chinese places that offered vegan meat. So I got vegan General Tso's chicken both times. And I was like, oh, this will be great. This will be those nice Meiwa nuggets that I love that, like, mm-hmm. Chinapan has. And I don't know what it was, but it was the worst. Like,
oh,
chewiest,
no.
Horrible. Like, it was so bad. It was so bad and very disappointing. So, for shame, Buffalo.
And isn't Meiwa in upstate New York?
I have no idea.
There is somewhere. I think they're somewhere in New York. I don't know. I'd literally just be making that up.
let's make sure to not fact check that out.
Okay. All right.
Well, cool. Yeah, Three Carrots is actually a place that every time I drive through Indianapolis, they kind of come in my happy cow. But I'm never stopping there, and the timing has just never worked out. So I guess that gives me more of a push to actually stop there and try their food. So thanks for that nice review, Paul.
No problem. So let's move on into our question of the week then, which is, should it be a crime to feed children a vegan diet? So Andy, how did this question come up?
Well, first let me say, after last week's very kind of heavy and stressful episode, I really just want to talk about something silly. And I feel like this whole thing is just ridiculous and silly, yet it keeps coming up in the news in various forms. This is the most extreme version of this, but it is kind of the argument that feeding your child, your spawn, a vegan diet is somehow like forcing some horrible choice upon them that they didn't get to make. So our entrance into this conversation is an article from WashingtonPost.com. Of course, we'll include all the links that we're talking about in the show notes. You can find that at thecommentist.com. And the article is titled, "An Italian Lawmaker Wants to Make It a Crime for Parents to Feed Their Kids Vegan Diets." So, already that's just so silly. Anyway, reading from that article briefly, just to give us some framing for this whole thing. An Italian lawmaker proposed a bill last week that would punish parents with imprisonment for raising their children on, quote, dangerous vegan diets, which the legislation compares to domestic abuse. Quote, "I have nothing against vegans or veganism as long as it is a free choice by adults," the lawmaker Elvira Savino of the conservative Forza Italia party told Reuters on Wednesday. "I find it absurd that some parents are allowed to impose their will on children in an almost fanatical religious way, often without proper scientific knowledge or medical consultation. Offending parents would be sentenced to at least a year-long stint in a jail for restricting their children to a vegan diet," according to the BBC. if the child becomes sick or injured because of the diet, the sentence rises to 4 years and again to 6 years if the child dies. So this is a pretty, this is not passed. I kind of doubt that it will, but this is a pretty heavy fine to impose upon vegan parents who choose to feed their children vegan, as I assume a vegan parent would naturally want to do.
I'm interested to know, because like one of the main things that, what I guess one of the main questions or one of the main thoughts that I had when reading this was just kind of like, well, why is this any different than, or like, how is this different than any parent that is like abusing their children in the sense of like malnourishment, like not feeding their kids enough, or just, I guess, feeding their kids improperly, I guess you could say. Like, I'm wondering the comparison, like the laws about where that is, if in, I guess, in Italy or just in the United States in general, because it says, when it says something like, oh, the sentence would rise to 6 years if the child dies, like, don't you think, I would assume, you know, this is something that I probably should have researched before before we hit record, but you know, you would assume that there would be a punishment if a child dies and it's revealed that the cause of death is malnourishment from the part of the parents. Like, you would think that that would yield a similar sentencing. So I don't know. Do you kind of see what I'm saying, Andy? Am I making any sense at all?
Paul, do you ever make sense?
Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah. So something that I couldn't find in any of the articles, and I read through a ton of them talking about this. This is getting a boatload of coverage from all sorts of media sources, is if this is the same kind of sentence for if your child dies from malnourishment not related to veganism. I'm not sure if this is like an enhancement penalty, kind of like a terrorist enhancement being added on to a prison sentence for, say, destruction of property versus destruction of property in the name of animal liberation. So I was unable to find that, but yeah, it's kind of like, why target this specifically at vegans? Because malnourishment can happen either way.
Yeah.
And this is like, this is nothing new. This is just kind of the latest in a long line of articles that you see pop up and make the rounds. And it's one of those things that non-vegans love to post and feel great about, you know, their choice to continue exploiting animals because, like, well, look, this vegan child died or this vegan child was hospitalized, so therefore, it's okay for me to continue to exploit animals. And this is just sort of like this huge, very public version of that, where it's actually becoming a proposed legislation.
And none of the articles that I read gave the specific number of incidents that you were just talking about. They would say like, oh, there were a handful of incidents, or there were like some incidents where the child got sick being on a vegan diet. And in one of the articles, it mentions like three specific cases. And I don't know if those were the only three cases or if that was just like three cases out of a handful of other cases. But you would have to think that in like out of the millions and millions of children that are out there, and I mean, this is like terrible and unfortunate, but you would have to think that there are an equal amount, if not more, simply for the fact that there are more non-vegan children than children, cases of children getting sick from malnourishment or having to be hospitalized because of malnourishment on a non-vegan diet. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, and I did look into that.
Yes!
So we got a couple of facts to drop on you, Paul.
Drop those knowledge bombs, Andy.
Okay, so according to the World Health Organization, 5.9 million children under the age of 5 died in the United States in 2015. Of those 5.9, we'll round it up to 6 million deaths, 45% of those deaths are attributed to malnutrition. So that is around 3 million children deaths in the U.S. from malnutrition alone. And I was not able to find this statistic, but I would bet a pretty penny that all 3 million of those children are not vegan.
or if you want to even say like, if it's 1% of the world's population is vegan, it's like maybe 1% of those children's deaths were vegan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and even if it was like 10% or 15 or 30, you know, even if it was like something that we know is way higher than the average like U.S. population, it would still, I think, pale in comparison to the amount of children that die from malnutrition that are not vegan. And, you know, and it's kind of like when people say, oh, well, vegans are so malnourished. And it's like, look at, there's like a GNC in every town. Like, do you think that this company has built their empire on vegans that need vitamins? Like, the United States is deprived of nutrients like all across the chart. You know, it's not something that is specific to vegans, yet all of a sudden everyone becomes a nutritionist and thinks, oh, well, vegans need this. And when you looked at the nutrients that were specifically mentioned in the proposition of this bill, it was like calcium, vitamin D, B12. And it's like calcium is incredibly plentiful in a vegan diet, especially if you're eating, you know, whole plant foods. And, you know, all vegans should be supplementing with B12, and it's smart to supplement with vitamin D, but you can also get that from the sun. And it's also fortified in tons of foods. It's fortified in like breakfast cereals. So it just feels like this lawmaker doesn't really have a grasp on a vegan diet.
Yeah. Or I don't want to sound conspiracy theory ish, but it's like, I kind of would think that there are like hidden agendas going on, because even though this isn't Italy, this isn't the United States, you would think that there are probably similar statistics to the ones that you just read about malnutrition and children deaths in the United States. You would think that a similar thing is probably happening in Italy, and maybe it's not. Maybe somehow Italy has solved this huge problem, because 3 million children deaths is an astronomical number of children. And maybe Italy has solved that problem, and maybe vegan children getting sick and being hospitalized are the only vegan children are the only children in general that are getting sick and being hospitalized from malnutrition. But I think that that's highly unlikely, and because of that, it's like, it seems like if this lawmaker's intentions were truly like caring to care about the children, he would not just be targeting vegan children, because in fact that is the vast minority of children in the US, at least the vast minority of children that are getting sick from malnutrition. He would instead be proposing laws that were maybe tougher on like parent neglect and the malnutrition that happens just in general with children. But that's not what he's doing. So to me, it seems like there's probably something else going on, or maybe he's just bored or maybe he just wants to put forth something that he thinks is going to get a lot of like positive attention for himself. I don't know. But it just seems like this isn't really... It seems like it's such a small, and I don't want to say I don't want to say small problem as if like malnutrition is something that's like a small issue, because it's not. It's a super important issue, but he's targeting such a small percentage, a very small percentage of that malnutrition, that it almost seems like it's pointless. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're kind of jumping ahead, but I'll just dive into this right now in terms of ulterior motives. From what I gather, the lawmaker, Elvira Savino, is tied to the conservative, you know, kind of like the right-wing party over there, mm-hmm. which does have ties to the meat and dairy industry. So that alone should kind of tell you where certain motivations may lie, especially given how just sort of totally ill-informed this whole thing is. But veganism is on the rise. Veganism, vegetarian is very much on the rise in Italy. And according to one article I found, about 8% of the Italian population is now vegan or vegetarian. And while this bill is sort of going through the system, there's three other bills that are proposed to actually increase the availability of vegan food. So to me, that is all kind of saying that certain interested parties are kind of very scared, and they wanted to get this headline out there, even if, like, I feel like they know this probably is not going to actually pass through, because, like, just like the fact that, like, if someone found out you're feeding your child a vegan diet, that alone, like absent any signs of malnutrition or ill health effects, just that fact you're feeding them a vegan diet alone could warrant a year in jail. Like, that is ridiculous. I can't imagine that the public would actually let that go through.
Yeah.
Then again, Trump might be our next president. So, you know, you never can't have too much faith in the general public, I guess. But and then another article, we didn't discuss this, but this was kind of floating around. And that is this case that there might be the first ever like vegetarian town in Italy. And we'll post a link to this article, but essentially it's kind of talking about all the meat-centric culture of northern Italy. And I'm sure our listener, Wendy, who sent us that email about all the plentiful vegan options in Italy might disagree. But after going on to discuss all these dishes, the article then says, but Chiara Appendino, the new mayor of Turin and a force in the populist five-star movement, M5S, could be about to change all that with her pledge this week to promote vegetarian and vegan diets as a, quote, priority in her administration. According to M5S's 62-page manifesto, which also called for better urban planning and the protection of public land, Turin's new mayor said the endorsement of meat-free and even dairy-free living was fundamental to the protection of the environment, health, and the well-being of animals. So, without being super familiar with the political landscape of Italy and what the vegan scene is like over there, it seems like there is a bit of a changing of the tide, and that could certainly lead to folks scrambling and making desperate measures to try and counteract that. So if they successfully, which they have, and here we are being a problem because we're talking about it as usual, but if they successfully get these headlines out saying like you could go to jail for feeding your child a vegan diet, people who are not informed on that subject would go, oh wow, it must be really dangerous to be a vegan. Like, not even feeding a child a vegan diet, just being a vegan in general. That's kind of the message that it sends out there. So I think that we can see that is probably most likely a major motivation for this bill being proposed.
Yeah.
And I did come across a video that was talking about this whole thing as well, and we'll again post a link to that. And something that they pointed out, I'm curious to get your take on this, Paul. They thought that this whole thing was actually really good because it's kind of a sign of the times. And they mention how at first you're ridiculed, then there's violent opposition, and then there's ultimately acceptance. And they think this is kind of a sign that we are in the violent opposition phase. And so that's actually a good thing, because that's showing that veganism is advancing forward. It's no longer just straight in the ridicule phase.
Yeah.
So, Paul, do you think that this is a good thing specifically because it is a sign of the times? Do you think that's kind of a ridiculous take on the subject?
I don't think it's a ridiculous take at all, but I would worry, and like, maybe it is a good sign if this is a true like model of, I guess, social movement. I guess that's a good thing, but I would still worry, as you've already kind of pointed out, I would still worry that people will read the headline that says Italian lawmaker wants to make it a crime for parents to feed their kids vegan diets, really not read anything else about it, or even read that article, but then come away with it with the idea that feeding, like, oh, this lawmaker wants to make this a crime, so it must be bad to feed your kids a vegan diet, and not really do any more research, especially if it's reinforcing views that you already have. So if you're already someone that is opposed to a vegan diet for whatever reason, it's like you're going to read that as a very affirming article, and you're like, okay, good. Like, someone's doing something about this. That's good. We're going in the right direction. So I think it could possibly have a negative effect on the vegan movement, in that it's going to make some people who are already against veganism, like, they're like digging their heels in a little bit more against veganism. I would worry about that. So I would worry about that. And I do want to say something more about that, but Andy, I'll let you finish up this, what you thought about this violent opposition.
I mean, I think that that's one way to put a spin on it and make it seem like a positive thing. For like non-vegans that are watching the video, but like ultimately I feel like it's not a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I was going to say was, in response to this article, because I was reading as I often don't like to do. I clicked on the comments section of one of the articles, the first one that we talked about, just the Washington Post one about this lawmaker, and luckily I was happy to see that it was mostly people being like, oh, this is ridiculous. This lawmaker is ridiculous. This is like a silly thing that's going on and they will never pass, blah, 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 blah. So I was like, okay, that's good. It's not a bunch of people being like, yeah, bacon. But what I saw a lot of was people saying like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm a 40-year-old vegan and I raise my kids on a vegan diet and they are healthier than any other kid they know, and I'm healthier than any other person that I know, and people tell me that I'm 40 and people tell me that I look like I'm 20, and it was like a lot of stuff like that. And the reason why I think that is probably not the best way to counter like this argument, if someone came forward to you and was like, hey, look, like this person wants to make it a crime, so it must be bad to eat vegan. I don't think that's the best way to counter it, even though like giving a personal story is good. I don't think that's the best way to counter it, because I think that we should acknowledge the fact that you could totally, if you were a parent, you could totally feed your child a vegan diet and they would be malnourished. Like, it is entirely possible. Like, if you want to, I mean, like, if you're a grown ass vegan, like, you eat whatever, like, you choose what you want to eat, you eat whatever you want to eat. But if you're a parent, it's like, you know, not that Andy or I have any experience with this, but it's like, you have the responsibility to take care of this child, and you can't just, you know, feed them potato chips all day. That would not be good for them. And they would certainly be malnourished. And of course, that can happen as if you are vegan or non-vegan, like that could happen either way. But I feel like it's important for vegans to acknowledge that it's still possible to eat a quote like unhealthy diet for a child as a vegan. And it's not the type of thing where that I think a lot of vegans want to put forward, is that as soon as you go vegan, like, it doesn't even matter what, like, we're not even going to talk about what you're eating. Like, you go vegan, you're going to be healthy. And that's like, period, that's the end of the story. Cause I think that's dangerous. Cause then someone could just counter that with one of the like handful of examples, like, oh, well, you say that it's healthier, but look at this example where this child like was actually malnourished. So I think that's something, I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this, Andy, but I think that's, I'm kind of just playing devil's advocate here. Cause obviously I would support a vegan parent, giving their child a vegan diet, but it's like, you still have to be smart about it. And I think any parent has to be smart about what they're feeding their kid, whether or not they're vegan. But I don't think that we should put forward the idea that if you are vegan, it's like you're automatically going to, and you're feeding your kid a vegan diet, it's automatically going to be good for them. It's like, that's not what I would say to a vegan or non-vegan parent. It's like, you got to look out for what you're putting on that plate.
Well, you put out a bunch of ideas, and I think I definitely agree that we should not, as vegans, put out the idea that if you go vegan, you are the healthiest person ever. And I also dove into the comments a little bit, and I saw, you know, me and my kids are vegan, and we never get sick ever, and it's the healthiest thing ever. And like you said, that's not true. So definitely make sure that you're not doing that. I think that it can kind of be an entree into, how do we talk about this? Like, if someone posts this on your wall, or it comes across your wall or your feed, something, how do you respond to this stuff? And you were saying you could make the claim that being vegan is the healthiest thing ever, but then they just show one of these articles about one of these vegan children that died or was hospitalized, and your whole thing goes out the window. Well, I think in response to those few cases where vegan children are dying, it's important to actually look into what it was that truly caused the children to die. You look at one of them and it's like, oh, they actually had this congenital heart disease, or another one where it's like the parents decided to only feed them carrots all day long, or they didn't breastfeed or use formula, or like whatever it is. And it's not like, oh, they were feeding them like a normal average vegan diet that is diverse in fruits and veggies and and some vegan mock meats or whatever it might be. It's like, oh, they chose to just feed their child applesauce all day long, and they thought that would give them all the nutrition that they need. And it's like, it's not the vegan diet that killed the child or hospitalized the child. It's neglectful parenting or lack of nutrition knowledge. And like, let's not pretend that that is something that's exclusive to some vegan parents. I've certainly spent plenty of time around parents where all I've seen them feed their kids are chicken nuggets, french fries, and like box juice. And I get it. I would love to eat that all day long too, because I am a 5-year-old at heart. Children are very picky, but let's not pretend that every parent is somehow a nutrition expert. You know, the average American has so little knowledge of nutrition. I remember before I went vegan, the only nutrition knowledge I had was protein is good, you know, because I was on some diet and my mom's like, you gotta make sure you get protein. And I was like, okay, like that was like all I knew about anything. Yeah. And I feel like that is not too far off from the general knowledge base of the average American citizen, at least. I don't know what kind of education goes into that worldwide, but it's like, let's not pretend that the average parent is an expert on nutrition for their child. And I think that there's this kind of myth that like a carefully planned vegan diet, and it's like, I don't think you don't have to like sit down and weigh out this and that. It's like, eat a variety of fruits and vegetables. You're probably going to get everything you need. Keep an eye on things. See how you're feeling. Make sure you supplement B12. Go to a doctor. Get your levels checked. See if you're doing poorly anywhere. But, you know, all these things are like, no. You just have to have a very carefully planned vegan diet. And it makes it sound like it's this incredibly hard thing to do to have a healthy vegan diet. And it's not that much effort to do it. And it just seems like it's like really scapegoating veganism for a parent's lack of knowledge or even just lack of effort in getting proper nutrition into their child.
And also, you know what? I think it's important to note that like nutritional having nutritional information, like you were saying, being knowledgeable about nutrition is something that I think is a problem in places like in the US and around the world, like where, you know, it's like some people just aren't knowledgeable about it and thus like wouldn't really like don't know whether or not they're making quote unquote healthy choices for themselves or their kids. And this is actually something that we touch upon in what's going to be in the interview next week with Calvin Young, where we briefly do talk about like nutritional like workshops or just helping people, you know, learn how to, cause it's like when I talk to people about veganism, I'm usually talking to people in a similar situation as me. So we talk about like, they're like, oh, you must be reading labels all the time and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I have to read a few labels after a while. I kind of just, if I'm buying similar products, I know what's in the stuff. So I don't really need to read that many labels, but there's the kind of baseline, like underlying knowledge that I understand how to read labels and that's on nutrition labels and I know what to look for. And that's not something that everybody just inherently knows. That's not something that like everyone's taught. So, like I said, touch upon this briefly. This is kind of a sneak peek at next week's episode, but, I don't know. I just thought it was important to note that I don't know if privilege is the right word, but you know, it's like not everyone knows how to read labels and stuff like that. And this goes for vegans and non-vegans. And obviously if you have this kind of knowledge, you're more likely to be able to kind of make smarter choices in terms of food for yourself and if you have kids.
Yeah. And that actually is an interesting point, Paul, because it's almost like, why spend this time and effort on creating legislation to punish people? Perhaps that's an important component of things, but it's like, wouldn't it be more effective to work on legislation to make it, say, mandatory to have nutrition education in school or mandatory nutrition class for like expecting parents, something of that nature to prevent these things from happening rather than letting these things happen and then punishing the parents when they do happen?
And it's super silly too, because the argument that this lawmaker is putting forward is just so, and I mean, I like, it's just so flawed. It's like you could you could find so much research that says, and again, not necessarily that eating vegan is the best for you or your children, but you could find tons of information that says eating vegan is like, it is perfectly possible to eat, to be very healthy on a vegan diet for yourself and your children. There's so much, there's so many resources that point to that. And that's really all that I would think, that's all that you need to kind of counter this person's claim. And like you said, it would be so much more beneficial if now that, like, since it's pretty, I don't know, I think it, maybe I have a narrowed lens as a vegan. I feel like it's becoming more and more accepted that it is possible to be healthy on a vegan diet, or at least to be nourished on a vegan diet. It's very, it's incredibly possible. And so, like you said, Andy, this would kind of, even though I guess punishment is like one way to go about this, it would be much more effective to instead put your funds and put your efforts towards educating people on how to like properly nourish yourself and your kids.
Yeah. And going back to your point about how it's generally accepted that it's possible to survive on a vegan diet, let alone thrive, kind of something that is like the first point that is being made by this legislation is saying that a vegan diet is inherently nutrient deficient for children. And I find this following phrase is something that I found myself saying a million times over when I'm doing outreach, whether it's online or in person. And that is, the Academy of Dietetics and Nutrition, which is the United States' largest collection of diet and nutrition professionals, has stated that a vegan diet is appropriate for all stages of life, from infancy to old age, everything in between, including pregnancy. And it's like, this is not a vegan organization. This is not a group that's intent on promoting veganism or animal rights by any means. This is a collection of diet and nutritional professionals that have determined through research that it is totally fine to have a vegan diet. You know, and I think they do use the terms well planned. So obviously you're not just eating French fries and Oreos, but you know, that is an incredibly powerful thing. That's not, you know, some, it's like a card you can kind of play on the table just to like get that argument out of the way that it's not healthy to do. It's like, okay, if this organization, this relatively unbiased organization, if anything, they would have a bias towards promoting meat and dairy, and they're still willing to say that it's totally healthy, and they even say it could provide potential health benefits over a diet that includes lots of meat and dairy and eggs. That's a really powerful thing to say. So the first argument within this legislation that a vegan diet is deficient, inherently deficient for children, like, you can just wipe that off the table. Paul, I think the other main argument that's put forth in this legislation is one that I believe we've touched on before. And I think it also kind of applies to our conversations about feeding companion animals, oddly enough. And that is that, you know, raising a child on a vegan diet is somehow imposing something on them that they would not choose otherwise. If someone is saying a parent is forcing a vegan diet on their child, it's like, well, yeah, like, no matter what you feed your child, you're forcing that upon them. You're their guardian. You know, you're this being from above that is in charge of everything from, like, when they sleep, although I guess many parents would say the child's in charge of that, but, like, you're the one making every decision for them up to a certain point in their life, and whatever you're doing, you are forcing that upon them, and that is your role as a guardian, is to make these choices that are the best for them. So if you've done your education, if you've done your research, and you go, huh, you know what, we don't want to kill animals if we don't have to. We don't want to cause unnecessary harm. This is the diet that can help us achieve that, even if not 100%. Then I'm going to make that decision for you because that is in line with the ethics that we are trying to instill within you. That's another thing you do as a guardian of a child, is you are trying to help shape their ethics. It's going to shape how they interact with the rest of the world, what they do for the world or take from the world as they, like, grow older and become their own autonomous being. And it just seems so ridiculous to say, oh, you're forcing that upon your child. It's like, everything you do for your child, you are forcing upon them up to a certain point. And as long as what you're doing is making sure they get all the nutrition they need, they're getting maybe the education they need, the emotional support they need, then I think that's a fine thing to be forcing upon a child if it's not causing harm. It's just educating them to not cause harm.
And I feel like where that argument comes from that the lawmaker, the Italian guy, is making, it comes from that idea that I think as vegans we're trying to reject, and that's like, if we can take it, then it's ours, and it belongs to us. And not only that, but we should take it. And that comes into play with like, oh, well, you're forcing your child to not eat certain things, or to not wear certain things. But it's like, it's just the idea that like, if it's possible to eat these things, it's like, you should be eating them, and you should be having your kids eating them. And it's just like a, I don't know. I've tried to explain that to like my meaty friends. And it really is something that I think is, it's just so ingrained in a lot of people that it's hard for people to reject the idea that just because something is available for you doesn't mean that you need to have it, or doesn't mean that it belongs to you. And I feel like that's where that argument is kind of coming from, is that it's so ingrained in this person, or I mean, this is what the argument that he's making. It's so ingrained that not only just because meat is available, like you should be giving it to your kid, that not doing that is somehow forcing them. And it's just like a silly argument, because it's like, you don't, it's not necessary. So it's not really forcing them to do something. You know what I mean? It's like, the lack of something doesn't mean that you're forcing them in some way or another. I think that's what I think.
Yeah. You're guiding them. You're not forcing anything upon them. Or if you are, it's sort of a necessary forcing upon of something. Cause if you could just like leave your kid laying around in a room with like shredded cardboard and like candy and broccoli or something, and it's like, they'll probably eat the candy and then the cardboard before they get to that broccoli. And it's like, just, you know, that's kind of like taking it to the extreme, but it's like, yeah, it's important for you to help make those choices for those that you are caring for.
You know, I love some sautéed shredded cardboard, though, Andy.
The little nutritional yeast, you can make anything taste good, Paul. You deep fry that cardboard.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right that it's like, if you left a kid to a child to eat whatever they wanted to eat, it would certainly lead to malnourishment.
I mean, I am now a grown adult and I can eat whatever I want to eat, and it doesn't always lead to the most nutritionally, you know, beneficial diet. It's like, I'm in New York, I'm going to go eat some fried bullshit from Champs or something, you know?
Yep. Some good old fried bullshit.
Yep. Vegan bullshit, of course.
Yeah, I was going to say, not vegan.
Yeah. They do make fried vegan bullshit now. So it's what a time to be alive. All right. Paul, I think we've mined this one. You got anything else to say?
No. It was like you said at the top, it was kind of nice to talk about something that is a little more silly. I mean, like, it's only silly because it really does. We both think that it really is not going to pass. Like, it would be a bummer if it ends up passing.
Yeah.
But let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think it was. And of course, you know, obviously children dying from malnourishment is not silly by any means.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. I was not trying to put forward that idea.
But the comical nature of this legislation, like, it's just so extreme. It's almost like an Onion article or something.
Yeah.
It's just like, how could anyone take this seriously? But it's getting the headlines, so we wanted to talk about it because you see this, or you see formats of this just coming up. I feel like every 4 or 5 months you see some article about this, and this is just taking to the extreme. So let us know what you think about all of this. You can do that through several means. The most efficient is to send us an email at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. You can also go to thecommentist.com, and we'll tell you a little bit more about The Commentist during our break. And then you can also connect with us on our Instagram, where we do post pictures of a lot of the food that we've been eating. And that is, of course, just The Bearded Vegan. So we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our interview with Naja Wright Brown.
So we're taking a quick break from the episode to tell you about thecommentist.com. That is the wonderful website where you can find all of the Bearded Vegan episodes, including the show notes, which has all of the links to all the restaurants, all the links to all the articles. If we've referenced past episodes, the links to those. It's basically your hub for all things Bearded Vegans. And additionally, it has a bunch of other great podcasts that you can check out. I already mentioned in this episode, Roll to Hit, which is a Dungeons & Dragons podcast for all you nerds out there. And there's The Unwind, which is a technology podcast. So check out those podcasts if you are so inclined. And you can, again, find those at thecommentist.com. That's thecommentist.com. The Commentist, the place for comments.
All right, let's get back to the show. Our guest today is Naja Wright Brown, the organizer of Vegan Soul Fest in Baltimore, as well as co-owner of The Land of Kush. Naja, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Andy. I am so excited to be here talking to you.
I am excited to have you as well for a number of reasons that we will get into. But before we do any of that, I always like to start at the beginning, and I want to hear your vegan journey. You know, what brought you to that?
Oh, yeah. Well, Andy, my vegan journey is from an health standpoint. I came to Baltimore in 2005 and got a physical, and at the age of 33, my cholesterol was like 249. And I was told that if I didn't do anything about it, I was going to be placed on meds. And I'm holistic, so that wasn't going to work for me. And I didn't know anything about a vegan, a vegetarian, or any Aryans when I started this journey. But I was a tofu eater back when I lived in New York. I used to eat tofu with black, that's when we were calling it bean curd. It wasn't even called tofu, but it was bean curd, black bean sauce, brown rice, and broccoli. So on this journey, I was learning what not to eat. Of course, things with cholesterol. So eggs, I was a big fried egg, scrambled egg, cheddar cheese, whole milk, ice cream, cake, anything that you can think of that has cholesterol in it, I was big on that. Pizza with extra cheese. So I see where the problem was coming from. So on this journey, I was learning how to take cholesterol out of my diet. And in 2006, so I said this physical was in 2005. So in 2006, I met my husband, Greg. We both worked for the same company, as I mentioned to you earlier, Verizon Wireless. And we were on the same management team. And Greg used to bring these dishes to work. Very unique. You know, you didn't see anyone else with them. He would bring these different dishes with different sauces, barbecue, mustard, curry, like all different type of stuff. And, you know, I'm like, okay, that's interesting. What do you got going on here? And this is when I started to learn about the vegan lifestyle and what it is and what it's about, and the compassion for animals and, you know, everything that was taking place in terms of practicing a vegan lifestyle, all through Greg. And then at the same time, he was sharing his vision with me on what he was trying to do for the community, because we know the African Americans and Latino have a high rate of obesity and heart disease and stroke and cancer, diabetes. So he's sharing his vision with me, and I'm saying, hey, you know, this all sounds cool. I can help you, because I used to do a lot of marketing and promoting in New York. And I think this is great. It's new. It's different. I love it. So I was really excited about it. And we sat down, planned it out. And fast forward, here we are. Land of Kush. You know, and it had to be in a certain way, because I like to eat food that tastes good. So a lot of times when you approach the community, when I say the community, the African-American, Latino community, it has to taste good. It can't be this rabbit food. Mm-hmm. So I said, we have to take traditional foods and we have to veganize it. So collard greens does not have to be cooked with smoked turkey and ham and all this other stuff. We can take all of that out and spice it up. Greg was able to accomplish that. We got to have yams. We have to have baked mac and cheese. And we had to make our own cheese with tofu and seasoning it the way that we season it, and baking it just like a baked mac and cheese. So we had to veganize these comfort foods, fried drummies, crab cakes, and test it in the market. Because you're bringing a new product to the market, you got to test it. So we tested it out at the African American Heritage Festival in 2008. And we sold out 3 days in a row. So this is a market where if you go there today, there's not one vegan option. So we came in there with our land and kush food, our vegan ribs, collard greens, yams, baked mac and cheese, and we knocked it out the park 3 days in the world or in a row. So did that for 2 years. In the second year, Artscape, which is the biggest Baltimore festival, reached out to us. They were doing a green section, so we couldn't cook our traditional way. We had to cook green, so we couldn't come out with the gas and anything that wasn't the green style cooking. So we had to create a new menu and use charcoal. So all we did was take the ribs and the veggie chicken, put it on some skewers and season it with the barbecue sauce along with some vegetables. People waited 30 minutes for these things. Wow. Like, it's all about the sauce. The sauce is the boss. So we had to create waiting rooms for people to wait for these skewers, you know. And along with that, we had created a vegan chicken salad wrap. So we were selling wraps and veggie wraps. And the question kept coming up while all these people were waiting online, where are you guys located? Where are you guys located? So you're hearing this over and over, and it's like, okay, we got it. We got to get a location. We just hit it. We had already collected close to 500 email addresses, so we were ready to search for a location. And in 2010, we landed on 840 North Utah Street, and it had to be set up the way in a way where we were close to the business. So the plan had to be, we were living above this business. Like, we had to live this business. So this was our dream. This is our dream right now. So we're living our dream.
That's awesome. Yeah. Land of Kush is definitely, I'd say anyone in Baltimore or passing through Baltimore, anyone on the East Coast needs to go there. It's one of my favorite places to stop when I'm traveling through. And yeah, those crab cakes, those are the best. They're so good.
Top 10 dishes in 2015. You know that? By the city, Baltimore City Paper. Top 10. We made the 10th spot.
That is awesome. And I imagine that's not just vegans voting on that as well, right?
No, the city paper. These were carnivores that came in and voted on this. Can you believe that? The reporters that came in and actually wrote the story on this and voted, they are not vegans.
Wow. That is awesome.
We are the only vegan restaurant listed on that top 10.
That is a true testament to the quality of the food for sure. and speaking of non-vegans eating the food, one of my favorite things to do when I do go to a vegan restaurant is just sort of check out who's in there, try and guess, like, are they vegan? Is this their first time trying vegan food? Did their friend drag them there? So who comes into the restaurant? Is it all vegans? Is it people that are just like, I need to try vegan soul food for the first time? Who's coming in?
I could tell you that a lot of the patrons coming in, it's word of mouth, a friend referred, and they're not vegan. They have a vegan friend or a vegetarian friend that's introducing a non-vegan friend to the food. So we have a diverse customer base coming in, and they're coming in from all over the world, not the country, all over the world. We just had a guy yesterday that was here 2 years ago from Australia, and he is hunting us down for a Land of Kush shirt. So we got to get this shirt out to him in Australia. But we've had folks from the Ukraine. We have folks from Canada coming in, Mexico, all over. And we had Stevie Wonder here on a surprise visit for 2 days in a row back in 2014 before we launched the first Vegan Soul Fest. So that really created a buzz for us, because when he came in, it's like the whole world knew what was going on. Like, talk about tens of thousands of dollars of free media right there.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We have some civil rights activists that come into the store, like Angela Davis, with politicians are always coming into the store. The lieutenant governor, Boyd Rutherford, has been in here. Presidents of banks, like, you know, you have folks that are interested in what we're doing and, you know, want to invest in expansions and things like that. So you're talking about all socioeconomic backgrounds. From we've had homeless people come in, you know, to you know, get some tea. We've had people of all ages. Children love the mac and cheese. So that's how diverse the customer base is coming into the Land of Kush. Everyone is curious about what's going on in here.
Well, you're mentioning the line at the events, and it's definitely well worth the wait.
Thank you.
I'm curious what is your favorite thing that Land of Kush makes?
I like the lentil burgers. I love the crab cakes. So my combination would be the lentil burgers or the crab cakes with the kale salad and the rice and vegetable medley. And with the lentil burgers, I'd have to have it with the mushroom gravy sauce, and with the lentil burgers, our vegan tartar sauce.
Very nice. Very nice. So switching gears a little bit, you are also the executive director of the Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about more of the work that you're doing there.
Okay. The Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland, BVSMD, is a startup. And one of the things that we did this year was organize a hip-hop green dinner. So what the Black Vegetarian Society's plan is to outreach further into communities, meeting people where they are through language that they understand. So hip hop is a language. It's a music. We're trying to get to the youth in a language that they understand, making it fun and festive, and also introducing them into the plant-based diet. So we collaborate with different organizations. So Hip Hop is Green is a brand that a gentleman out in Seattle is pushing across the nation. So I'm the Baltimore organizer for that. That's one of the things that the Veg Society is doing. We're also developing programs where we can go into the schools, elementary, middle, high school, college, and have a curriculum on, okay, this is what the plant-based diet is. This is what it does. You know, get some compassion and animal rights teachings in there along with environmentalism, and continue to have events, outreach events. Because what was happening and what's still happening with the Land of Kush, we have people and organizations and companies that are pulling from the restaurant resources. So you're pulling and we're contributing and we're donating and we're doing this and we're spending time, whether it's demos, lectures, and we want to separate that from the restaurant. So we formed this entity, the Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland, which we want to connect with different cities across the state of Maryland to do this outreach. So the pilot is Baltimore, but the plan is across Maryland.
A while ago, there was an article going around that was, you know, a list of 100 black vegans. And of course, Black Vegans Rock is becoming really prominent now. And whenever I see things of that nature posted, often there's a lot of comments that are kind of antagonistic and like, why do we need black vegan anything? and I'm just wondering, how do you respond to those comments? You know, why is there a need for a black vegetarian society?
Well, you know, we're really underrepresented in a lot of organizations. So that's where the whole Black Vegans Rock concept came from. AFCO, you know, definitely, you know, speaks well of that. She's the founder of the Black Vegans Rock and felt the need for black vegans to be represented, because there are tons, as you see from that list, over 100 that are doing great work in the community and they're not being recognized. And if you think back, the term ITAL is a Jamaican term, and ITAL is vegan. It's plant-based. So this movement started way before the major vegan animal rights movement started. So it's kind of like we are representative out there, and that's the whole basis of how Vegan SoFest started, because we want to show folks that we have businesses, we have people that are out here representing black vegans, and we need to celebrate and appreciate that. And not be underrepresented. I go to a couple of veg fests, and our demographic just isn't out there. And we need to come out in numbers. And the way to do that is you got to bring this stuff to the city so you can see we're here. We want the same things. You know, we eat vegan, and, you know, we want to have fun. We buy vegan clothes. We are here. You know, we need to be represented.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, let's move on into Vegan Soul Fest, as if, you know, the restaurant alone wasn't enough to take up all of your time you're co-founder, organizer of Vegan Soul Fest, and you've started talking about it a little bit, but you know, what is kind of the history behind that? What was the inspiration and what kind of went into creating this fest?
Land of Kush is a kind of hub where people come together to collaborate and brainstorm our ideas. So if you've ever been in a restaurant, you may come across folks that, you know, are huddled here and they're in intense conversations and they're probably there for an hour, 2 hours. Well, there was a day when myself and Brenda Sanders, you know, Brenda Sanders, she's an animal rights and a social justice activist in the community with Better Health, Better Life, who's also a partner in Vegan Soul Fest. We were sitting in the corner in the restaurant. We were kind of like just going back and forth on, you know, things that we see in the community and things that are needed. And boom, hey, we need a vegan fest in Baltimore City where everyone has access to it, whether you are driving, public transportation, whatever. We need something in the city. This is outreach. This would be a true example of the outreach that we can collaborate on and bring and implement. So we just suspected this little thing, like, you know, a couple hundred people, few vendors, nothing major. And we connected with the Downtown Cultural Arts Center on Mulberry and Howard Street, 401 Mulberry and Howard Street, and went to them and said, hey, we just want to do this little thing. And that's all we kept saying. We want to do this little festival. And, you know, yeah, you know. We launched this. And the numbers just kept increasing with the vendor. Like, we had exceeded 20 vendors in a matter of a month and a half, 2 months. And mind you, we only had 3.5 months to do this because the date we set was 3.5 months from when we met and discussed this whole thing. So these numbers were increasing very quickly. So it was like, okay, all right, well, we don't want to reject anyone because the whole purpose is to, you know, expose, you know, these organizations and these businesses, you know, to the folks that, you know, want to attend this. So we had to get permission from the city to allow vendors to set up outside around the building, around the blocks, Howard and Franklin, and there's a street behind the building. Cool, you know, that's all. We weren't even sure about the numbers yet. I mean, you look on Facebook, you see, you know, the likes and, you know, but sometimes you see those likes and it's probably a percentage of those that are going to come out. So we weren't really, you know, concerned about that. That day when the event happened and we saw the people online going around the building waiting for the goodie bags, I was like, oh my goodness. This is the bomb right here. Like, we did it. You know, no one knew what was going on. People were driving by. They were getting out like, what is going on over there? And the Baltimore Sun came out. Dan Rogers from the Baltimore Sun, like, he was amazed about what was going on. And then he ran the story, a new food festival in Baltimore. And then when I read that, I said, wow, I guess it's not a 1 year thing. We got to do this thing again. 1,200 people, man. That first year, 3.5 months of planning and organizing. This is the first time Brenda and I had put together a festival like this. So we were learning as we went along. From the marketing standpoint, I'm a marketer, promoter. I know what to do and how things need to be done. We were working on a small budget and we used what we had to accomplish what we needed to accomplish. And it was a success.
Yeah.
Major success.
Yeah. That's, you know, most fests I know are like planning it a year in advance. So to pull that off in just 3 months is highly impressive. And I was a vendor last year, and, you know, I do like a veg fest almost every weekend. And Vegan Soul Fest just has a totally different energy than most of the events that I do. It was the type of thing where I feel like if someone came in and was not vegan, they would want to be a part of it.
We have to show people. We got it. Sometimes when we're marketing things, we're just thinking of one market, the vegan market. But if you're trying to expand that market, you have to understand the strategies to pull people in from different markets. And once you understand that, and I have an understanding, because I know what I like. You use that, the music, adding the DJ on the corner on the first year, playing family friendly, festive music. Everybody talked about the DJ. Like when we did the Soul Fest last year, the first, is that DJ coming back? Yes, he's all the way from New York. He's a vegan DJ. He is coming back. He will be there. Like, that was the first thing we were asking. We want him back. Like, he was so good. He's coming back. You know, it's music is soothing to the soul. And there are so many different genres of music. And I enjoy different genres. But when you're trying to reach a market, you have to understand what that market likes. And that's how you're going to pull them in. You know, and it's kind of this culture. It's a clash of cultures, you know, because you had some vegans last year, or some attendees that didn't like loud music. It was too much. You know, everything is not for everybody. But what we're trying to do with this Vegan Soul Fest is we're trying to bring those folks in that are curious, but they don't want to come into this like, okay, is this going to be stale? Is this going to be boring? Is somebody going to beat me over the head with a lot of talking? Or am I going to be able to enjoy this? Because I'm a vegan. I love comedy. You know, I love amusement park. You see what I'm saying? Like, I love to do a lot of fun things. So whatever I do, whatever I attend, it has to be fun. Okay, there's a lot of this top of lecture. But there's also time for fun, too. So I like to have fun. So the musical component was very important. And then we just added on last year the live performances, because people like live entertainment. So we added that on last year and people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a view of the stage from my tent, and not only like musical performers, but also like dance troupes were up there.
Yes,
and
yes.
It was just a ton of fun.
Well, you know what happened with the dance troupes? In the gym, there was supposed to be some fitness demos going on, and no one was going in the gym for the fitness demos. I guess it was too late in the day. Fitness is kind of funny. You got to get it in early or it's not going to work. So what I did was I said, okay, I don't like to waste people's time. Let's use some of the stage time to exhibit what you all do. So we used that time for them to do their, it was Dancematic up there showing you how you can be fit by dancing. And then we had the young ladies from the Fit Girls Rock doing what they do to be fit. So that fitness is definitely a component that we will be adding. It's just we have to understand it more, because it's something that people usually like to do in the morning. We're already there now. I don't know if the festival will start early in the morning, but fitness is a component, and that's why David Carter, the 300-pound vegan, is a featured speaker this year at Vegan Soul Fest. And we also have a fitness vegan from Fit Fathers that's going to speak on being vegan and being fit, because it's important. That's a whole nother category of veganism.
Mm-hmm. And who are the other speakers that you do have for the event?
Well, Dr. Milton Mills, we always love to have him, one, because he is a medical doctor. And some folks, you know, they want to know what the medical standpoint of veganism is, because you hear stories about people going vegan and they're being nutritionally deficient. Okay, so he's covering all of that. So he's going to cover all of that from a medicinal standpoint. Then we have Antoinette St. Clair, who's a raw foodist. She's going to speak and also do a cooking demo, but she's speaking about foods from a healing standpoint. So, and then Dr. Terry is a holistic dentist. The importance of, you know, eating and the wellness of your mouth and your teeth and how it affects your body. So it's so many different topics being discussed this year. So it's going to be a treat for everyone. So something for everyone. If you want to sit through all the lectures, that's great. If you're the type of person that just wants to take notes and just sit there and don't want to be bothered by the music and all of that, that's going to be the place to be in the theater listening to the speakers. a variety, definitely a variety of topics.
Very cool. Anything else new? Any more developments that are going to be happening this year that weren't happening in previous years?
We're going to try something different as our opening act. So we have a woman, Jazara from Philadelphia, who's going to come in with her live band and incorporate some vegan fashion.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So this is the first time we're trying this, and we'll see how it works out. Because vegan, you know, fashion, you know, people were out there. You got T-shirts too, right? You got T-shirts. Well, they have clothes, vegan clothes, you know, made of cloth. And so they'll have their models displaying that while they're singing with the live band. So, yeah, that's going to be nice. So that's how.
I can't wait. Well, Najah, this brings us to the end of our time today. And for all those for all those listening, Vegan Soul Fest is this coming weekend, August 20th. Najah, how can people connect with you, social media, internet, any websites you would point people towards?
For Vegan Soul Fest, vegansoulfest.com. We also have a Facebook page, Vegan Soul Fest. At Vegan Soul Fest is our Twitter tag, and then on Instagram at Vegan Soul Fest. And if anybody wants to reach me personally, you can call me on my cell at 443-844-5046. So August 20th at Baltimore City Community College, 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. That's 2901 Liberty Heights Avenue. So be there or be square.
And we will, of course, post links to that in the show notes as well. Najah, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me, Andy. This was great. And thank you for that great feedback that you did in your interview about Vegan Soul Fest. I was so happy
of course.
To hear that. I'm glad you had a good time. Looking forward to next Saturday.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Have a good one.
So we hope you enjoyed that interview with Najah Wright Brown. And again, if you want to comment on anything that you've heard during this episode, if you have any questions, if you have any reactions, whether positive or negative, if you have any points or counterpoints to anything that we've said, there's a few different places you can do that at. There's the aforementioned thecommentist.com where you can go on to this episode and write a reply or a comment directly on the episode. You can email us at thebeardedvegans.com. You can send us a direct message or a non-direct comment on our Instagram, which is just thebeardedvegans. Is that all our social media, Andy?
That's all the shit we got.
Yeah, that's all the vegan bullshit that we got. So yeah, Andy, what do you have coming up?
Well, as y'all know from the interview, I will be at Vegan Soul Fest in Baltimore, Maryland, this coming weekend, August 20th. It's sure to be a really fun time, so come on down, get your grub on, pick up a shirt, come say hi, give me a high five. Then after that, September 10th, as mentioned at the top of the show, we will be at VegStock in Millville, New Jersey, doing a live podcast recording, and of course, we'll have the Compassion Company table there as well. September 17th, I, Andy, will be at the Phoenixville Veg Fest in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. Paul, Bearded Paul, will be at the Catskill Animal Sanctuary Shindig in Saugerties, New York. And then September 24th, I'll be at the DC Veg Fest in Washington, D.C. You can get all the dates, deets, and links for those events at CompassionCo.com. Just CompassionCo.com. And that's where I'll be. Sweating my butt off for the month of September.
So I think that's all we got for today. So, yeah. Bye.
You leave us hanging like that, Paul?
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. I really hope eventually they put the commentist a place for comments on the website somewhere.